I want those of you who have heard me speak before know that I'm generally limited by how much water I have. I can go and go this morning. Now, my topic is home security. But before I get too into it, I want to give you a bit of a waiver, maybe a warning. There's a good chance I'm going to say something a little controversial. I might offend a few people. That is not my intentions, but coming from the parents I came from, I tend to do that. So, I just ask that you hold off on stoning me till afterwards. I think we're going to have a little break at some point, so you can get violent then, but hold it off during. Now, with home security, we have things to talk about. So, okay, it could be like we have with our physical house. We want to keep it secure. We want it safe because this is where we live. Now, likewise, we want our spiritual household in order. And, you know, a home is more than just a house. Okay, it's your family members. So we want to discuss the things that will create a secure environment, the things to protect against things that can invade the secure environment. So with home security, the things to a safest home, it's a cycle. And I made a diagram, this. You'll see it just go over and over, and it will lead in from one generation to the next. I'm going to start with, you need to get the right spouse. And once you have found the right person to marry, should you desire to marry, you need to have a good marriage. And if you have a good marriage, you can raise good Christian children. And if you've raised good Christian children, you increase the chances that they're going to pick the right spouse. And then they'll have a good marriage and so on and so on. Now, you can have a good cycle, a good secure Christian cycle, go on and on. You can have a bad cycle, go on and on. And we see this where bad situations, children come from bad situations, and they go into bad family situations themselves. Now, at the same time, you can have a good situation, and someone can develop bad out of it. You can have a bad situation, someone good can come out of it. Throughout all the things I'm going to discuss this morning, I want you to remember that a lot of the stuff I will give you, the information, statistics, whatever, are general. It's just what applies to average or the majority of people. Now, considering where we are, the group we have here this morning, I'm basically preaching to the choir. Okay, most of us here are very devoted. I mean, you look at the distance we traveled, the things we sacrificed at home to be here this morning. The people here is probably our good group. So I want you to think about the things we're going to look at this morning and throughout all today and all of the things we looked at yesterday. Think about taking these things home, presenting them to your congregation. Because a lot of people here aren't going to need it so much. A lot of you here are in really good shape. So let's start with choosing your right spouse. And of course that is dating. I'm going to start maybe your early 20s, your late teenage years, whatever. Dating and securing the right spouse. Now I'm going to make a statement that a lot of people will probably disagree with right now. You don't have to date a Christian. You really don't have to date a Christian. But by all means, you should definitely marry one. Okay, there's a difference. You can date somebody, and you can convert them. Once you've converted them, then you should marry them, should you desire to marry them, and they've truly converted. I think a lot of times we limit ourselves to looking at people within the church, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with dating each other in the church. But at the same time, we can date people who aren't Christians, but we should not marry them until they are Christians. As most of you who've ever done any physical work on a house you're about to move into, it's best to get all the rooms painted and fixed up before you move in. If you move in and say, okay, we'll paint it along sometime, it can be years before you finish a room. You get things in order before you move in. Likewise, with this, you get your selected partner here ready for marriage before you get married. This is what happens, what goes wrong with a lot of marriages today. They assume that the person that they've married or will marry is going to change, or they're going to be good once they get married. You got to get this set before you get married. Some issues in modern dating. Now, a lot of you, maybe not a lot of you, some of you might remember a time when dating was fairly casual. We had a family reunion in January, and we had some video interviews with my great-grandfather, J.O. Holmes. And he lived to be in his mid-90s. He was born in early 1900s, and he was discussing meeting who would eventually become my great-grandmother. And at that time, and this was how dating worked back then, you would see several people at the same time. You know, you would court somebody, court someone else, and it was, you were getting to know them. It wasn't intense. You're getting to know them. You might have a meal with them. You just go visit them at their house. You sit in the parlor, meet the family. It's the way it used to work. And you would do this with several people before you ever came to deciding on one person. Nowadays, we don't have that. We have basically an intense trial marriage. Starting at teenage years, people will date. And they will date one person for a long time, and it will be intense. You'll see them declare that they love each other, when a lot of times they're too young and too immature to really know. And one of the worst things you'll see in these intense trial marriages, they will include doing things that God intended only for the actually married. Nowadays, I've seen this in high school, and I'm sure it's still going on. This is the way society has turned. What happens is, instead of casually dating a few people, getting to know them, they will date somebody, and very soon into dating, they will start engaging in premarital sex. They will date this one person for a long time. A lot of times, they will get themselves in trouble and get married. Not long afterwards, they'll probably separate and get divorced. Okay, this is a vicious cycle here. This intense trial marriage system of dating we have nowadays is not good. Now, teenagers especially, they will base this long, intense trial marriage off of superficial things. Now, I'm going to demonstrate this for you in the form of a graph. Keep in mind, this is just not real statistics. It's just to illustrate a point. It's okay to laugh. It was kind of intended for that. Well, superficial teenage girls, like you'll see here, that here you have boys, you have cars, you have money. Teenage girls don't care so much about boys, but they like cars and money. Superficial teenage boys like hot girls. They don't care so much for the not-hot girls, but again, you see cars they do still like. Now, again, that's just a humorous point, but the fact is we have teenagers, young adults engaging in very intense, unscriptural relationships based on superficial features, things just as looks. So we want to ask, are we ready for marriage? You hear this a lot. Will a marriage be happy and successful based on love alone? The saying or the song, is it true? All you need is love? No. Yes, you absolutely need love. You can't do this with love alone. Now, can anyone here tell me in the Bible, the two different forms of love that's mentioned?
Agape and phileo.
Want some response? Agape and phileo. Now, there's a difference between the two, is there not? This means yes. This means no. One is kind of an affectionate love, a warm and fuzzy love. One is more of a love of duty. Now, you need both for that marriage. And a lot of young people are getting married today off of that warm, fuzzy love only. Yes, you need that, but a lot of people don't realize that will wear off at some point. You start having kids, work, bills, it all starts piling up, it's going to take more than just feeling warm and fuzzy about each other. Things to consider. If your potential spouse is here, you need to discuss and agree upon most of this before you walk down the aisle. You need to discuss how you're going to handle some things like finances, each other's families. And in that, you know that society has changed and that parents are living longer. And you have to consider taking care of your parents when they reach an age where they cannot take care of themselves. And so you need to discuss, are they going to move in with us? Are we going to put them in a nursing home? You got to discuss this stuff. Children, you better make sure you two are agreed upon that you want children. And then you ought to go ahead and decide some of your child-rearing philosophies. A lot of divorces and disagreements in marriages occur because they have arguments over these things. And these are things that should be decided before marriage. Now, little things like you don't know what to paint your future child's room, you can discuss that later. Okay, but as for, hey, do we want kids? You better get that down before you get married. Today, a lot of the society has decided, oh, we'll handle all this stuff as long as we have love. Now, it takes more than that. You want to decide, what do we do if one of us gets a job and we have to move? And this is just several things to consider. There's way more than this. But a lot of people are not considering this. And they reach a disagreement at some point in their marriage, and they will split up over this. I read an autobiography of somebody, and he had been married to this Italian woman for a while. And not long into the marriage, they had divorced because they couldn't decide where they wanted to live. This is something you should decide beforehand. Some situations you can't predict, but prepare for what you can. Okay, so now we have the security checkpoint, the wedding. Now, society is going to, every time you see a movie or you read a book or it brings up a wedding, it always brings out nervousness on the part of the bride and the groom. They're real nervous about, oh, is this the person I want to spend the rest of my life with? Oh, I can't imagine seeing this person every day. And this is marriage is a long, thoughtful decision because you got to see this person when you wake up. This person's there when you look up from breakfast. This person's there when you walk out of the bathroom. You agree to take on a stalker, essentially. You better make sure you got the right person. And nervousness is one of the biggest emotions that society will display at a wedding. Now, it's okay to be nervous about, oh, there's a bunch of people, and I've got all these words to remember, the whole I part, the whole do part. But the fact is, as Christians getting married, it shouldn't be nervousness that we feel. It should be excitement. Okay, it's okay to be nervous about all the people that are there. It's okay to be nervous about, oh, did they make the cake right? Is it there? Are my families getting along? It's okay to be nervous about that. But you should be excited about spending the rest of your life with this person. If that is not what you feel, hold your horses. Okay, it is not a big deal to cancel the reception. It is not a big deal to send back the gifts. If you feel nervous, it's okay to say, hold on, I know everyone's here. Let's wait longer, or this isn't right. It's not a big deal to cancel this and send this stuff back. It is a big deal to go through a bad divorce. So this is a security checkpoint. Feel excitement at a marriage, not nervousness. I want to show you some divorce statistics. Now, some of these, when I saw them, they were surprising, but I'm going to try to show you some explanations here. And the main reason I'm showing you these are things we need to consider before marriage. Okay, as to you'll see a lot of these factors could have been fixed or could have been addressed. Number one cause for divorce is marriage. If you're a married American, your marriage is between 40 and 50% likely to end in divorce. And I'll go ahead and tell you, people are just, a lot of the problem is they're picking the wrong spouse. If you live in a red state, that's a conservative or Republican state, you're 27% more likely to get divorced than if you live in a blue state. Now, wait a minute. That can't be right. This is the Bible Belt. We're supposed to be conservative. We're supposed to be right. The reason why is in red states, people get married younger. And the younger the people in a marriage are, the riskier the marriage. Just because you get married young doesn't mean you're going to get divorced, no. But this is just your statistics here. I didn't create these. I found these. These are actual math people who love to do this did this. If you argue with your spouse about finances once a week, your marriage is 30% more likely to end in divorce than if you argue with your spouse about finances less frequently. Again, of course, you can't account for every financial situation and problem that's going to come up in a marriage, but your general things should be discussed before you marry. If your parents were divorced, you're at least 40% more likely to get divorced than if they weren't. If your parents married others after divorcing, you are 91% more likely to get divorced. If only one partner in your marriage is a smoker, you're 75% to 91% more likely to get to divorce than smokers who are married to fellow smokers. This doesn't have anything to do with nicotine or whatever. It really has to do with being similar. Okay, not every habit has to be the same. Absolutely not. It's probably best if they don't. But this is really not illustrating anything about smoking or health. It's about agreeing with your lifestyles with each other. If you have a daughter, you're nearly 5% more likely to divorce than if you have a son. Now, some people might think, oh, it's because an increase in women just leads to discord. Probably. But the reason why is that people have shown that fathers invest more into raising children when they have a son than when they have a daughter. You'll see most men want a son, most women, they want a daughter. If men have a son, they put a little more effort into the raising of the child. This 5% more likely from the daughter comes from dads who, you know, wanted a son and they wanted to play with the son. Instead, they get a daughter, and they don't help out the mother as much. That's where this one comes from. If you're an evangelical Christian adult who's been married, there's a 26% likelihood that you've been divorced, compared to 28% for Catholics, 38% for non-Christians. And also, I didn't put it up here, but it's also 38% for atheists. So really, the less religious you are, the more likely for divorce. Okay, how many of you are from Indiana? I need to see. Okay. Now, I asked earlier if they knew where Wayne County, Indiana was. If you live in Wayne County, Indiana, and are over 15 years old, there's a 19.2% chance that you've been divorced. This leads to the nation. The next place is somewhere in Florida. And Brother Ron told me about some other statistic involving cocaine and crime. Stay away from Indiana. Both you and your partner have had previous marriages. You're 90% more likely to get divorced than if this had been the first marriage for both of you. If you're a woman two or more years older than your husband, marriage is 53% more likely to end in divorce than if he was one year younger to 3 years older. Women. Now, a lot of this just has to do with, we know in a Christian family, that it says clearly in the Bible that the man is to be the head of the house, and when the woman is a lot older, she tends to exert more of an authority over this. Just because the woman's older than the man does not mean this marriage will end in divorce. I'm just showing you national statistics. If you're of below average intelligence, you're 50% more likely to be divorced than those of above average intelligence. So many jokes for little time. If you're a female serial cohabitor, that is a woman who has lived with more than one partner before your first marriage, which means living with somebody not married, then you're 40% more likely to get divorced than women who have never done so. Obvious, because this clearly violates what is scriptural. And the last one here is a doozy. If you're in a male same-sex marriage, that is a homosexual relationship, 50% more likely to end in divorce than a heterosexual marriage. If you're in a female same-sex marriage, this figure soars to 167%. We've known a long time two women can't really live together. Just because they... Okay, so that's divorce statistics. And a lot of this is stuff that, A, we see as unscriptural, and then B, should have been discussed or worked out before marriage. All right, so now you're married, you're good and miserable. How do we hold on to this good marriage? And this is before the kids are born. Now let's look at threats to a marriage's security. I call them the misses. There is misunderstanding, there's miscommunication, there's the misses. I'm kidding. Cross it out. But misunderstanding and miscommunication do become big issues, and a lot of it is with younger marriages, just because there's a pretty big learning curve early in the marriage. A lot of it's just getting used to the gender differences, okay? Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Maybe not. But statistics have shown that people who have a sibling of the opposite sex tend to get along better in their marriages. And a lot of it's just, you know, if you're a boy growing up and you've had a sister, older or younger, you at least know some of women's habits. If you're a girl and you've had a brother, older or younger, you're a little used to them. You know some of their oddities and tendencies. Now, you know, for example, my sister Rebecca marrying Andy, she came preset for Andy because between my dad and myself, we had her ready. Rebecca learned there's, you know, when to walk in front of the TV, when not to. She, Andy, you scored big. Now, it's just a silly little example, but the fact is, things like this, just growing up with a sibling, you get used more to a boy or a girl. And for people who don't, there's, you know, this learning curve of getting used to how men are, getting used to how women are. So, I'm going to discuss some of these gender differences. Again, just general, overall, not every man is like this at all. Men are generally activity or action-oriented. They don't sit around and discuss their emotions and talk too much. You can spend a long time together, two men, and not much will be said. Andy and I, we go golfing, and, you know, we might talk about equipment, the course, Todd, maybe a funny story, maybe sports. We don't share feelings. If he tried to share his feelings with me, I'd probably throw a club at him. And can be stubborn. This can be a good thing because, you know, in terms of religion and keeping your household serving the Lord, takes some degree of what we might call stubbornness. Okay, the father, the household needs to have this. They don't readily share emotions, and also they're worse at detecting the emotions of others. And a lot of that is they're verbal communicators. Now, again, not all men are like this. Some are great listeners, and some are good at picking up on nonverbal clues. But most men, if you tell them something, they're going to take it at face value, whatever you tell them. And then they can, you know, as smart as men can be, you know, you can be a great physicist or a chemist or whatever. You know, if this information especially is coming from women, there's only so much you can hold at one time. Got a graph to illustrate this. This is the amount of information that men can hold. This is the amount of information that women give to men. This is the amount they can hold. This is the amount they can hold during a football game. We see it decreases exponentially here. Women are more conversationally oriented. They can spend hours together and they can find a lot out about each other. Okay, again, I told you Andy and I can spend 4 hours together. Andy can go home, and Rebecca can ask him, how's Ben? I don't know, okay. Well, how's school for him? I don't know. And, you know, if Mom asked me the same thing about Andy, all my answer would be, I don't know, I guess so. Women are often confused as to how men can spend so much time together and not find out this stuff. It's because most men just don't share it. Okay? Now, yes, men can share these emotions and feelings a lot of time with their wives, and that's what eventually needs to develop. But between each other, men just aren't going to share it. Now, I mean, it's amazing how conversationally oriented women can be. I mean, you see women, they're going to go to the bathroom, they take someone with them. Oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom, you want to go with me? And I asked, you know, I was like, why do you guys do that? Said, oh, just to talk. I said, okay, I didn't know if you needed help or what. But, you know, that's pretty limited to women. If I said, oh, I got to go to the restroom, Brother Tony, you want to come with me? He probably hit me. I don't blame him. Women have what's, you've heard of women's intuition. It's true, they are better at detecting nonverbal clues. If a woman thinks a man's lying, she's probably right. Women are better at picking up on these nonverbal clues than men are. Better at multitasking, it's actually pretty much been proven. They tend to hold on to some stuff longer than men do. They might just have a better memory, or don't know what. But I was talking to someone after services one day, and she said, you know, women can be just downright mean to each other. You know, she worked at an office, and she said, when two women butt heads together, you know, them and all their friends, they have to split up into two groups. It might be months before they speak again. Men can literally get in a fist fight. 5 minutes later, they will be fine. They will be best buds again. I played basketball for a couple of years in high school, and there had been situations where two of the boys were maliciously throwing punches at each other. 5 minutes later, they're high-fiving each other on the court, having a good time. Now, women are also quicker to adjust or alter their habits to match the partner. Now, this can be a good or bad thing. In teenage years, this is a bad thing. You look at premarital sex. Early in the teenage years, a lot of the reason why is there's usually an average of 3 years difference between men and women in terms of dating and marriage. You got this 17-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl. You know, the average 17-year-old teenage male non-Christian is going to want to do certain things, and she's more likely to adjust to match him. This could be in terms of eating, or it could be in terms of something worse like that. Now, to illustrate women's emotions, I got another graph here. This is times that women cry. Sadness, happiness, again, this is mainly from a men's point of view. Women understand what goes here. Men have no clue what goes in this big piece of pie. Just going to have to get used to this in a marriage. And this is what a lot of marriage is getting used to each other in this big chunk. Again, I'm just humorous, okay? That's a misunderstanding. Now there's miscommunication. Now again, this stems from some of those same differences where we misunderstand each other. And a lot of this is honestly the man's fault. In that they can't detect what's really wrong, they just take what's given to them at face value. For instance, when a woman says, you know, there's an argument or something's gone wrong, the woman will say, no, it's fine, I'm fine. A lot of the times the men will think, okay, it's fine, that's what she said. Got a graph to illustrate what's actually going on here. When women say it's fine, some of the time it is in fact fine. Most of the time, it is not fine, and I'm not going to tell you why. You're supposed to already know. Again, that's not always true, but you guys really are going to stone me after this, aren't you?
Oh, just rim.
Yeah. Women mind.
Now, one of the problems that men don't do well enough is listen. I told you that men are action-oriented or problem solvers. If you give them a widget and there's a problem with part A, there's a protocol to fix that, and men can usually do that. Now, when they hear a problem, I think, okay, I got to fix this. Now, a lot of times you'll have The wife has had a bad day. Children have been bad, or they work was awful. Just something went wrong. They had a bad day, or they got a problem. They start telling their husband about it. And a lot of the times the husband will think, oh, okay, got to fix this. And it turns out a lot of the time the women just want them to listen to their problem. I was unaware of this for a very long time. I think there's a television show on, and there had been some situation in this where the husband would not listen to the wife. He tried to fix what it was, made things worse. And the woman finally said, when I come home and I'm you know, complaining about this and that or telling you about a problem, I just want you to listen. I just want you to be there for me. And Rebecca said, amen. This is before you were married, but you were dating. And a lot of times, men just don't listen. And it's not that they don't hear, not that they don't have an open ear, it's that they try to do something about it. And it turns out a lot of times the woman just wants you to just listen to my problem. So, just summing this up, this misunderstanding, miscommunication, how we can secure against it. Men, we got to open up our ears a little more. We got to listen. Women, please be patient with men. We're slow. Now, you'll see a lot of separations or divorces, and a lot of affairs begin in that men aren't there emotionally for their wives. Now, men just aren't naturally touchy-feely, but there's a minimum that men should try to do as far as listening to their wives and just giving them a shoulder to cry on, at the least. And when men aren't there for women in that way, you'll see a lot of emotional affairs that then develop into full-blown affairs start like this. This is where a lot of it starts. So we have to guard against misunderstanding and miscommunicating with each other in a marriage. Pastor taking a lot of pictures. Now, again, this is something I got off the internet. I did not create this. This was a list, and I agree with most of these things that showed the top 10 marital problems. And here they are. You see the top 10 marital problems that was listed was the frequency of intimacy, division of household responsibilities, partner lets themselves go physically, and willingness to have kids, differences in parenting philosophies, inability to have kids, and this is something you can't help, but it does have a strain on a relationship. In-laws, house stress, or taking care of the house, property, things like that, financial stress, and boredom. Now, again, we talked about how dating used to be and how dating is now. Marriage used to be not so much free time. You go back 100 years, and again, when it wasn't married just based on that fluffy, warm, fuzzy love, everyone had responsibilities. You know, the man would be out working, the children would be out working if they didn't have school. The woman would spend all their time working. This is before there was air conditioning, running water, and all these luxuries that we have now. There was so much time spent just getting things running. There wasn't a ton of free time. Nowadays, there's a ton of free time because we have machines or other people to do this stuff for us. And this is where a lot of discord will begin, is in this free time, how do I deal with this person? Because I've seen a lot of young people get married thinking, well, we did fine. He or she went on vacation with me and my family. We got along great. When we were dating, we'd go out to the movies or we got along great. Everything was great at school. And I'll say to them, how often did you have nothing to do and spent time with them? What do you mean? You know, was there a time where you weren't doing something, you weren't on a date, or you weren't doing an activity, you were just there, just each other? I can't really recall one. There's a lot of that time in a marriage. And so, can you deal with this person even when there's nothing to do? I think that's what this boredom here is. So now, got a secure marriage, it's time to move on to raising Christian children. Again, those top 10 marital problems are things that should have been discussed a lot of time before marriages. Now, these decisions on how to raise children, how to give out punishment, what are we going to do, school, raising them, things like that, Most of that needs to be discussed before you have them. Most of that needs to be discussed before you even get married. Now, parents have to be on a team and on the same page. It can't be good cop, bad cop. It's kind of, they got to be on the same page. They got to agree as far as how punishment works or things like that. Because when they don't, you'll see kids can be like, you'll be surprised how crafty little kids can be. They will play each parent against each other. They don't have to be that old or that bright to figure out how to do that. They will. They will play parents against each other. Parents aren't on the same page. Discipline should be consistent between parents. If you get in trouble with dad for doing something, better get in trouble with mom for doing it too. Now, at this point, raising the children should become the parents' priority. Okay, children can break your heart. They can make you absolutely thrilled. And parents, you know, and they naturally already do this. They center things around their children so that they can grow up to be good Christians. Now, coincidentally, as far as marital satisfaction go, marital satisfaction is at its highest right after marriage. It is at its lowest after the first child. As much as parents love children, this does affect the strain it has on, you know, mom and dad between each other. Now, coincidentally, you don't see an increase in marital satisfaction until the last child leaves. So, keep that in mind. Now, here I have this chart that is used often to describe how parenting affects children. From left to right, you have love. On this side, you have low love. On this side, you have high love. This is the amount of love that a parent will give to a child. Up and down, you have expectations. They have high expectations for their child. They have low expectations for their child. And that can be in school, in church, different things. If you have low love, low expectations, you have a neglected child. If you have low love, high expectations, you're more or less a general, an army general to your children. This can lead to abuse. Again, this is not set in stone. This does not absolutely happen, but I'm just showing you the likelihood. If you have a lot of love for your child, low expectations, you don't care how well they do at things, they turn out spoiled. You have high love, high expectations, this is what you want. They understand that they have certain things they need to meet as children, as Christians, and at the same time they have a lot of love and support from their family. They grow up to become more responsible, more self-sufficient. This is our goal here. Now again, I'm essentially preaching to the choir here. Everyone here has probably got, you know, if you've already had children, or if you have children, or if you're going to have children, you have high expectations and high love, not a problem. Today in the world, we have a lot of this. We have a lot of love for children because it comes natural. We have low expectations and we wind up spoiled. We don't care how well they do in school. We don't care so much. We just want them happy, and so we'll give them whatever they want. And this is what's gone wrong with a lot of the world. We're spoiled. Now this is from the same place I got the top 10 marital problems. This is top 10 signs that she'll be a bad mother. That's what it was titled. But these don't apply just to women. These don't apply just to mothers. This goes to both parents. They are self-destructive. They don't want kids. Now, it's obvious they're going to be a bad parent if they don't even want the little critters. Obsessively materialistic. Self-centered. Again, when you have children, the focus shifts away from you and your partner towards the children. A party animal. Obsessed with staying young. Not nurturing. Impatient. How many parents here think it takes patience to raise kids? Mom, you raise your hand too fast. Complete perfectionist. Violent. Hey, you don't want someone violent raising kids. Now, when I look at all this stuff, I see immaturity. It's kind of the main thing. Some men and women might be like this in their teenage years, and we hope that they grow out of it. But now, as far as the young people here, you guys probably aren't like this. But I think this has become a problem in society because this makes up a lot of people who are becoming mothers and fathers. Now, how many have heard of... I don't know how well this is going to go over. How many have heard of the term cougar? This was not around a few years ago. All of a sudden it is, and it's an issue. And what's happening is these women, that cougar's a term used for women, are, you know, in their 30s, 40s, they might have had kids, and then they might get divorced. But they have a lot of these things. They're obsessed with their appearances. There's a lot of vanity going on. They got a group of friends, and they're more on the phone with their friends than they are paying attention to their kids. And a lot of times you can go to out in public, you can go to a restaurant, you can go to Walmart, and you'll see this 30, 40-year-old woman who looks like she put a lot of time into herself physically. She's got her phone to her ear the whole time, kids running wild, and she's looking like, why are you bothering me? I'm on the phone. Hey, this is starting, you know, it wasn't a few years ago, but this is starting to become a problem in society. This is where a lot of divorces will come from, because men and women will be like this, and they're not, you know, it's, we had a meeting last week with Brother Sam at Mount Carmel, and one thing he said in a marriage, when you're dating, you focus on the other partner, and then in a marriage, you start focusing on yourself. Marriage suffers for that. This is focusing all on yourself as a mother or a father. And this is becoming a problem in society because children are suffering from this. For some reason, men and women are doing these impractical things, worrying about how they look and all this. And I understand wanting to look good, wanting to stay young and all this. But when it comes to raising children, you gotta make a sacrifice. You might lose an hour getting ready in the morning, but you get to spend that hour with your kids instead. So that's what we got to do as parents, not worrying about all this. Okay, now, young children. Say toddlers, maybe. We have to expose them to the Bible and its teachings early in life. Bible stories. You don't have to read them scripture, King James Version verbatim, because it's going to go over their head if they're really young. But Bible stories. We can raise them on this, and at a young age, they'll understand that there's something more than just mom and dad. There's God. Okay, there's something above mom and dad. I think, if possible, it's best for one parent to be able to stay at home in these youngest years. Now, I know it's especially hard when the economy goes down to raise kids. Diapers, food, you know, cleaning materials. It takes a financial burden on them. And then, you know, I used to think that children were really expensive when they were little. And it becomes more of a cruise control later. But I asked my mom, she says, now it gets more expensive because you start dealing with college and things like that. So, but during this time, if possible, if you can make it work financially, I've had 4 years of psychology, and I can't tell you how important it is for these children to have at least one parent home during this time. Now, a lot of times it's just the economy. We'll have people who have children, and they're in daycare at 6 months. And you know, this is too young. I understand using daycare, but the fact is, it's best for the children, okay? One parent can stay with them. And Paul wrote in the Bible that he wants women to guide the house. And even though you've got kids at one point, they can probably wash their own clothes, wash the dishes, feed themselves, and maybe even their siblings, someone still needs there to spiritually guide the house. Now, parents have to set examples, not just by words, not just by commands, but by setting examples. I'm going to elaborate on this a little later. Don't lie to your children. For the wrong. Is there a Santa Claus? No. Brother Mike, is there an Easter Bunny?
No.
If we tell our children that these things exist, is that the truth? No. So what are we doing? Well, if you're not telling the truth, you're lying. Consistent, timely discipline. One of the worst things with today's justice system is someone will commit a crime, And a lot of times it'll be a year later before they're tried for it and may or may not receive punishment. And then they'll get out, commit crime again. Now the reason why is because this has basically been proven. The longer time you have between an action and its consequences, the harder it is for them to learn the lesson. If you tell them don't touch this, they touch it, spank them then. Don't wait till 15 minutes later. Don't wait till 15 days later. Spank them then. The sooner they associate the feeling of getting punished with committing an action, the sooner learn not to do that anymore. This has been something proven over and over. Consistency is a big key. And again, parents have to be on the same page on this, or else kids will play you against each other, I guarantee it. They're like little lawyers, basically, because they try to cover themselves. You know, Mom might have said one thing, but Dad did this. I can always use that example that Dad did to say, oh, but Mom, Dad did it. Kids will work it out like that. Now, this consistency here, you can see this go completely wrong to standing in the checkout line at Walmart. You got a kid there saying, I want that candy bar. Mom or Dad will say no. Might ask again, I want that candy bar. No. You keep saying no, they'll learn, stop asking. Now, what a lot of parents do wrong is the kid will say, I want that. No, I want that. No, I want that. No, I want that. Oh, okay. You know what you've just done? They've learned the more and more they ask, the more persistent they can be, the more likely are they to receive what they want. You see that kid lying and bawling on the floor because he's not getting the cereal he wants? Issue with that. Now, a lot of times, again, you see that whole cougar phenomenon there. Woman on the phone, got the child in the checkout lane. The child just wants the candy bar, and she just wants to talk to her buddy on the phone. Okay, fine. Okay, you're creating this misbehaving, spoiled child at this time. Men, women, parents, we got to put down the phone and pay more attention to the children. Teenagers. This is true. Teenagers revert mentally to the same stages they went through as a toddler. You thought they were fun as a toddler, wait till they hit 13 or 14. The only difference is, and I hope this is a difference, they're potty trained by now. They're a little bigger, they're harder to throw over your shoulder and carry them. Some of you might be able to do that, but you know, this is when a lot of trouble begins. Now, this is going to work both ways. A mother should be a living example for daughters as to how to dress and how to act modestly. Then fathers need to enforce this. Vice versa, men, this is when men start being an example to their sons. And then, of course, women help enforce these rules. Now, you'll see kids at that younger stage, dad is kind of more of the person you play with or the person who enforces punishment. But, and I can personally say this, as you get older, dad becomes, you know, for boys, becomes more and more of a real example. You learn a lot of life lessons from them. And mothers and daughters, it works the same way, except, you know, mothers are typically the more nurturing with young children. You can see this in the middle of the night when, you know, a child can't sleep. They figured out which side of the bed mom sleeps on. They go to mom. Mom! I can't sleep. What do you want me to do about it? Mom generally has the nurturing and the patience to get him back to sleep. The dad will probably say, rub some dirt on it, walk it off, something like that. But at that young age, when a grizzly bear walks in the house, you go to dad. How many of you had a grizzly bear walk in your house? Didn't think so. But these teenage years, they start becoming more important. There's really no cruise control as far as parenting goes. You got to stay active way on it. Teenagers need to study the Bible more, and I'm not a teenager anymore, it's been a while, but I've seen too many teenagers, even in the church, not know enough of the Bible. I personally don't think I knew enough at that time, and I didn't study enough, and had it not been for my dad dying, I might not have picked up like I did, and even then I probably should have studied more. But in school, especially in these red states, like the Bible Belt, whatever, most people go to, you know, some sort of religious service. Now, most of the world thinks it's all the same. Old Methodist, Baptist, whatever, it's the same. And us, we're so different that we appear far left almost. Because we don't do Sunday school typically and all these other things. We don't have music. We don't have a Christian rock band. We don't load up a bus and go to a vacation Bible school. We don't do those things. And discussions at some point, especially during these teenage years, come up. And I have personally witnessed too many times teenagers who have been baptized. They are in the church. They cannot defend what they do Sunday morning to save their life. They cannot do it. And it's sad. I was in a senior year. I was 18 or so. And there were two or three others in the church in my class. And we got discussing, some of the other people had been discussing music and church. And you know what was coming. Hey, you are the guys that don't believe in music. You know how that goes. But two of the other people who were in the church and were with me, they explained, oh no, we just sing a cappella. And then the other people started asking scriptural questions. And they couldn't answer it. Hey, Ben, do you know? I was able to explain a little bit. I should have been able to explain it better at the time. But the fact is, too many times we have teenagers in the church that can't explain basic doctrine. I'm hitting myself because I didn't know enough back then. I should have known more. The teenagers today still need to know more. Parents need to influence this, enforce this, but it's up to teenagers to take this up, study it. It's pretty sad when we, teenagers in the church, can't explain why we don't use instruments. Can't explain so many different things about just what we do on Sunday morning. We're there every Sunday morning. We can't explain why we do it. Be careful of extracurricular activities that teenagers take in. If I had a soapbox, I could get on. Now, coming up on this next slide, I'm going to get pretty, well, maybe controversial. Stone me later. But kids, you know, they're going to get into their extracurricular activities a lot of times. Kids might do band, cheerleading, football, different sports, different clubs. Be careful of these things. A lot of them are harmless and fine. But I'll tell you now, you won't find a much more profane and perverse group than teenage boys in the locker room. Probably not a good influence for a young Christian man. Things like dancing or cheerleading. I'm going to have to dedicate a whole slide to that. Sorry. Look at what 1 Timothy 2:9 says. Now, it's not coming out yet, but Brother Tony has an article on women coming out that would play a long dice with this. It says, in like manner also that women adorn themselves in lots of apparel, shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly ring. Tell you what we see in cheerleading and dancing. Immodest clothing, sexual movements, the center of attention thing. Now, a lot of us are under the influence that these things are harmless, that they're fine. Thrice it violates 1 Timothy 2:9 here. And now maybe, I don't know how it is for everyone at every school, but where I went to high school, cheerleaders wore skirts. They didn't even comply with the school dress code, but they were not modest. They came high up enough above the knee. And underneath that skirt, you got what's basically underwear. And a lot of, if you've seen cheerleading, a lot of cheerleading movements involve sometimes holding up a knee practically to your ear. And you're showing everything that's under the skirt to the crowd. And then you get clapped for it. A lot of the movements, you jump up and touch your toes. Same thing. Studies were done as to how men thought how willing women would be to engage in sexual activity. Turned out the number one thing was if and how well they danced. And then this the center of attention thing. Is it meek?
No, it's not meek.
Now, if there's somewhere where cheerleaders and the dance teams dress modestly, they're not completely loud, obnoxiously center of attention, okay, it might be fine. But from what I've seen in my experience, it just can't be scriptural. And what's bad is we have a lot of girls in the church that do this. They may not be aware of these things, but again, I'm preaching to the choir here. We need to go home and say these things to the families at our congregations that have this problem. Now, cheerleaders think this is harmless, it's just dancing, it's just fun. Okay, you got this cheerleader and you got this 17-year-old boy. When he sees this girl dressed modestly, holding her leg up to her ear, showing whatever's under that skirt, I can tell you now, the 17-year-old boy is not thinking, oh, what a moral lady with good Christian values. She'll be a great mother. He's thinking, you know what he's thinking. This is not scripture. And I know I dedicated the whole slide to this, but all our extracurricular activities that kids engage in need to take into investigation. Again, you will be surprised just how bad a boys' locker room can be. It's not just the boys themselves. The coaches will walk around telling dirty jokes. And then the kids go around repeating it. What a bad influence. So looking at long-term security, a big overview of security for your family here. You want to create a loving home environment where this is where your family wants to be. You'll see people that come from a home situation where they don't want to go home. The person they confide in the most is their best buddy, and it's okay to have a friend that you confide in. But the fact is, the parents should be where you go to for advice. And we want to create a loving home environment where the kid comes home, they feel safe, this is where they want to be. And it's no problem with them wanting to have friends and going out with friends every now and then. But you've probably seen these commercials where Walmart's trying to get you to buy a lot of their product because studies have shown that kids feel more self-confident or grow up to be better if they have a family dinner. It's not what they're eating, but it's true. This home environment where you sit down and you eat together and you spend time together, those families far healthier. Now, limit the children's activities. Again, some of these extracurricular activities aren't scriptural. And a lot of the time, they got so many going on that the family never really comes together and sits down for me. I had spoken to someone who had a family where all the siblings were involved in multiple activities. And then the parents were busy with both work, and then they had school. And I said, did you ever have a family meal? Well, on vacation, we might. But it's basically everyone's all spread out. You're losing the strong sense of family that a Christian family needs. Now, even though parents are top fighters of children, you can't worship them. A lot of times, people center their lives around their children, and yes, children are a priority. They are super important. But it can accidentally become idolatry here. And then, these children leave the house, you get what's called empty nest syndrome. Parents don't know what to do with each other because all they ever focused on was their children. Remember, God first. I got this much time to go.
I had your water.
Now, there's some modern issues with children. And again, these are some things that didn't exist years ago. Television should not be used as a babysitter. And it turns out that a lot of times the television will be used as a babysitter. I didn't put the statistic up here, but there is one where they indeed say if they're really busy, they will use the television to occupy their child. Now be careful of these programs that say they're for children or that they're for teenagers. Okay, for those of you that have heard me talk on youth, these teenagers, these programs that are aimed specifically at teenagers. Be careful, because you know, there's these shows or a program or channels aimed at teens, ABC Family, Teen Nick. They have things on them that aimed at children should not be seen by children. They tell me to hurry up. I personally think that children should not have their own television in the room. If they do, you should be able to monitor what's on. Cell phones can be a gateway to trouble. There's no reason for a 9-year-old to have a cell phone. They will use this to spend more time talking to their buddies than with their friend or with their family. Again, that's an issue to home security. Teenagers and dating. Parents, if you got some sort of instinct about who your child is dating, chances are you're right. Okay, be wary. Don't push them too hard because children love to do opposite what their parents tell them to do. Now, the next thing I'm going to show you is what may be the most controversial thing I'll say. I'm trying to move fast because I had the women tap on the watches. It is possible to be too strict or too conservative with your children. I know this is going to come off strange, but it is possible because you can restrict the kind of choices that they can make as adults. Some parents basically force their children into a certain style, okay? And they make all the choices for their children. And basically what they're doing, and I understand why, is they're trying to remove temptation from their child's life. But the fact is, you cannot keep your child from temptation. You cannot keep your child from the sin of the world. Now, the goal here is to teach children how to make the right choices so that when they grow up, they're on their own. Mom and dad's not looking over their shoulder. They have their own family, that they can make the right choices and then teach their children how to make the right choices. Now, most people will say they want their children to go on to go to college or to go on to get a job, and in this, they're going to have to deal with people. They're going to have a certain amount of people skills. And you're not going to be able to shield them from the temptations that's out there. Now, when they're growing up, there's certain little things they're going to encounter. You look too stupid. There's certain things they're going to encounter. They are, you know, at a young age, they might have someone want them to tell a lie. They have to learn how to handle that. At some age, they might have someone ask them to steal something like an eraser. They've got to learn how to handle that. As they grow older and older, they meet this increasing difficulty of temptation, and they have to learn how to say no. And I think a lot of times it is possible that we are so restricted with children that we don't let them meet these challenges. And they never learn how to say no on their own. And a lot of times they will go on to college or work, and when all of a sudden they realize mom and dad's not there looking over the shoulder, they think no one's going to know if I do this. And they might have trouble handling this temptation. You've heard the phrase, give a man a fish, he'll be fed for a day. Teach a man a fish, he'll be fed for a lifetime. This is what we want to do with children. We're not always going to be around to give them a fish every day, so we got to teach them how to do it for themselves. Now, for those of you that have been to college, you know that it can be wild, even in some of your conservative colleges. I tried to keep this from my mom just so she wouldn't worry for a long time, but she eventually found out. For the past few years, I've had roommates that drink like a fish. I don't choose these roommates. UAB gives them to me. But, you know, I look at this and I open the freezer, there's rum, there's vodka. If I wanted it, I could have it. I tell you now, I don't want it. Your eyes got really big. I tell you now that I don't want it, and I've never been tempted to take it. But I start thinking, you know, all my life I've sort of faced challenges. Sometimes I've messed up, but I got in trouble myself, but I had to learn how to get out of it myself. And I feel like my mom and dad had raised me to the point where I could learn to say no to temptation on my own. And I think, you know, there's some kids that absolutely restricted and forced in that they don't learn how to do this on their own. And you will be amazed at what you see in college. You can walk out to your campus green and there's a girl in a bikini laying out. It's true. I've seen it. And there's more temptation. And it comes all at once when you get to college or work. You know, through your teenage years, you start getting things one at a time. You reach 18, 19, it comes all at once. And it's a bombardment. And these kids that have been raised super restrictive are either A, going to basically give up and run home, B, succumb to this temptation. Not all children do this. Some come from this and do absolutely fine. But it sounds weird, it sounds odd, but I think it is possible to be too constrictive with children. Now, again, I mentioned how today we have to deal with raising or taking care of your parents when they get old, too. It's called the sandwich generation because you've got kids that are young that are coming out of diapers and you've got parents that are going in. And so this is something that needs to be discussed with, you know, before marriage as to how you're going to handle this. And if, you know, this is something that's only become prevalent recently, so for those of you that are already married and it's starting to come up about taking care of your parents, discuss as soon as possible. What are we going to do with this? What are we going to do with that? The worst thing to home security is false security. A sense of false security. And just because a family looks safe, you see them at church every Sunday morning, doesn't mean it's safe. And we're getting a lot of today with what I call the pseudo-Christian. And this is nothing more than when you look in Revelation 3 and you see the letter to the Laodiceans, this lukewarmness, think you're fine, you're not. Okay, this is our whole generation, but we see a lot of this just in our congregations every Sunday morning. They're there every Sunday morning, and they bring the whole family. And they look good. They all bring their Bibles and their Bible covers. They pay attention. They stay awake. They're well-behaved. But then they'll go home. These are the teenagers that can't explain their doctrine to their friends at school. They go home. They go their separate ways. The Bible's set down. It's not open. Mom and Dad go to work. Don't pay much attention to the kids. Kids go out to friends. They don't come home. They get in trouble. This is number one issue in false security. We got this pseudo-Christian family. And again, I don't think we see it here. We got the cream of the crop here. But this is something we need to go to our home congregations and start hitting on. Okay, so that's home security. It's this cycle. You choose the right spouse. You have a good marriage. You raise Christian children, and they are more likely to choose the right spouse, have a good marriage themselves. And you want this good cycle to go on and on. If you have a bad cycle, you want to break it. But I think these things work in tandem. So that's home security. Apparently I was wrong. I didn't even get through my water. But again, a lot of you probably disagree with a lot of what I said. You wait till we get out in the parking lot and stone me. And if any brother has anything they want to add to that, they want to stand up and disagree with, that's fine. Have at it now.
I think that was a good sermon.
Okay.
Very good.